Good evening. Yes, we are here for our last talk on the 10 most common objections to Christianity, and we save the best for last. We save the most difficult for last, which is the problem of evil. Why would God allow evil into this world? Why would God allow pain and death and suffering to exist? So we're going to tackle that issue tonight. I'm going to do it differently tonight. I'm actually going to be an actor tonight. I'm going to take on the role of a skeptic. And I am going to be a skeptic. Your job is to convince me of the Christian answer to this question. Now, you have to know that I'm only an actor in this situation, that if I offend you, it is not on purpose. It's simply I'm acting my part. I'm trying to get you to think critically about your answer. So if I give a little kickback, don't be surprised. I'm going to, you know, if we look at it on a scale, the hardest skeptic is a 10. I'm going to try to be about an 8 tonight. But I am coming as a respectful skeptic. I'm not someone who's just completely shaking my fist at God and hate or whatever is out there, as a skeptic would say. I'm not that kind of skeptic, but I've done my homework, and I'm pretty hardcore. So we're going to try that. If you think you have an answer to the question, we're just going to take turns. We want to get this on the audio, so we're going to pass this mic around. If you'll just share it, and you know, if you, yeah, it's hot. So, all right, yeah, there he is. He's way back in the back. He's trying to duck out of the way. So, before we start, let's just pray. Heavenly Father, we're thankful that you've given us answers, that we do not have a blind faith, that the Christian faith is secure as it rests upon historical fact, historical events. It rests upon reason and rationality. It's not foolish to be a Christian. It's foolish not to be. So we come tonight, Lord, seeking to get equipped and just improve as apologists, so that we can go out and have an answer and give a defense for the hope that is within us. Be with us now, in Jesus' name, amen. Okay, so Neil, would you help me with this? Would you just hold this mic and maybe walk around, and if you have an answer, you can just pipe up. But, so, all right, so from this point forward, I'm going to be a skeptic, okay? So let me put on my skeptic face here. Yeah, all right, so here we go. So I really appreciate the invitation tonight. I'm glad that you responded to my letter. As you'll recall, I wrote to several churches with this challenge. No one responded. I'm assuming that they did not have the answer. You did write back to me. You said that you could answer the challenge that I have. Basically, a challenge that would pretty much decimate the Christian faith if left unanswered. So I'm interested to hear what you have to say. Now, obviously, I'm a skeptic, so I'm not convinced of much of your faith. You know, it's kind of weird for me to even be in a church, although I will say that I don't feel too threatened, since many churches in your denomination actually observe Evolution Sunday. So I don't feel too threatened, I guess, in one sense. But let's look at this challenge. I'd love to hear what you have to say. And I'll give you some of my feedback too. Let's have a healthy dialogue. Try not to crucify me at the end of this, okay? We don't want any witch burnings or anything like that, okay? So here we go. Here's the challenge before you. If God is all-powerful, and you say he is, if God is all-knowing, and you say he is, and if God is loving, and you say he is, and yet, we have this fact for sure, that evil, pain, suffering, and death exist in the world. Now, I would love to know How are you going to reconcile this? I'll just tell you right off the bat, I think this is proof enough that either one of these things are not true, or all of them are not true. Maybe we just live in a messed up, chaotic world where there is no God, there's only chance of chaos. And here we are. So eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let's go. What do you have to say?
Hi, John. I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad to be here.
I'm Melody. And you are right. Actually, both of those, the top of the screen and the bottom of the screen, are true. And you may
say, we agree. So we can go home, right?
You may say, how is that possible?
Right.
Well, the way that I would answer that question or those facts is that God has given us a choice. When he created people, and that's what we believe, and you can, you know, you may have a different belief of how people were made, but people in general, if you want to just go from that standpoint, are sinful. Okay. Now, you may not, I'm not sure where you stand on sin. Where do you stand on that?
Well, let's say this. If there's no God, there's no sin. All right. If you know, let's just say right and wrong are simply illusions. If there's no God who sets the moral law, I mean, let each man do what is right in his own eyes, because there is no right. I mean, right and wrong are basically like Santa Claus. Okay? I mean.
Well, let me ask you a question. Have you ever done something maybe that made you feel sick afterwards?
Well, I ate a lot of food one time.
Okay. Yeah. Or made you, I mean, like, have you drunk to excess where you got sick, like you threw up afterwards? Okay.
Yeah.
So your body reacted poorly to a decision, right?
Right. It's not made to be an alcohol tank, no.
No, but the point is that your body reacted poorly to a decision. So you could kind of look at that as a bad decision, right?
Well, you know.
Even if you're not thinking of absolutes at this point.
It was my decision, although some people enjoy. Mm-hmm.
But you can't deny that your body reacted poorly.
Yeah, my body did react that way.
Well, with making choices, our choices can have bad reactions too. So we call that sin, that when we sin, there's a consequence. But the point is that God has given us that choice. We can either make good choices or bad choices. When people make bad choices, that's the evil aspect. Okay, people can choose to inflict pain. People can choose to be nasty to other people, or they can choose not to.
Okay.
So what do you think about that?
Well, I think that, when we think about choice and so forth, again, we live around one another, we make choices, we try to get along. But ultimately, if I make a choice to shoot someone, that's my choice. Now, the law is going to say you need to be put in prison for that. Mm-hmm. But who can say that I'm wrong for shooting someone?
Well, again, you can look at it from a scientific standpoint and say, did you inflict pain on that person?
Yes, but we inflict pain on things all the time.
Okay, so, but you're still making that choice. So God has given us the choice to either inflict pain or not.
So let me get this right.
Go ahead.
So you believe in a God who would rather uphold freedom of choice than end thousands of years of pain and suffering. What kind of God is that?
Well, he's a loving God in the sense that we are not robots.
Okay. Well,
we're not puppets. He doesn't say, I'm going to manipulate you and, have you do this and that, whatever. He gives us the choice whether we follow him or not. We can either accept him or reject him. So.
Right. I just think that whole game of Let's let people have a choice pitted against, as you would say, possibly 6,000 years of death, suffering, and pain. It just doesn't add up. It just doesn't, you know, how long is God going to let this go on, you know? I mean, we can make lots of wrong choices. I mean, I don't know. Yes.
I'm going to maybe approach it through a story as well. Have you ever been in a restaurant and see a family and the kids are being unruly?
Yeah, that's my kids.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And they're bothering people in the restaurant. They're running around. They're just playing havoc. And nobody else in the restaurant gets to enjoy themselves because these kids are just being unruly. Have you ever been in a situation like that?
Oh, sure, many times.
Okay. And how would you feel about that? Like, how do you feel about the parents of those children?
Well, I feel that, you know, when it comes to raising kids, there's no magic wand, and, you know, there's all kinds of books written on this subject. No one seems to have the answer, so to speak. Once again, though, you know, if you look at it from my perspective, this whole thing of unruly kids and, you know, kids being bad, once again, what is bad? Okay, are they really being bad? What is bad? I mean, if there's no God, there's no bad. If there's no God, there's no good. It's just action. Okay, we're just atoms and electricity.
What about respect? Do you feel like the children are being respectful or disrespectful?
Well, I feel that, obviously, we all need to get along. I think that if we want to avoid more pain and suffering, since we have enough of it like it is, then we'll just keep our kids at bay and, you know, keep them from being pests. Yeah, sure.
Do you think that it's a parent's responsibility to teach their children to be respectful of others in certain situations, like a restaurant or things like that? Do you think that parents should teach their children some sort of order, like going to school has an order to it, the driving has rules, and so there's order there? So do you think that that's a parent's responsibility to teach their children order?
You know, if we care anything about our kids, we're going to want them to be successful. We're going to want to give them all that we can so they can have a better life in this really messed up world.
Now, because we feel that way about our kids, does it mean that they always make the right choices just because we feel that way about them?
Do they always make the right choices?
Right, because we feel that way.
You know, in terms of what we tell them is right and wrong, so to speak, in quotes. No, they don't always make those choices, no.
Then that's how I look at it with this up here. God is like the parent, and he loves us so much that he wants to teach us his order. He wants to teach us his laws. He wants to teach us how to be successful and all of those things. And we're his children, and we don't always make the right choices. But that doesn't mean that he stops loving us. It doesn't mean that he stops being love. It just means that he is that parent that tries to help us through those bad decisions. You know, when a child makes a bad decision, a parent doesn't just throw them out. Yeah. That parent tries to help them work through
it. I spank my child. I don't strike my child with cancer.
I understand that. But again, that is a way of looking at God's relationship with his children is like a parent to a child. That's why God can be loving and there can still be pain and suffering and death in the world because children don't always make the right decisions.
I see what you're saying, but I think if that's the case, then God has a very heavy hand. I think God is very, very overreacting.
If I steal a candy bar,
I go to hell. Come on, man.
So you're making an assumption because the person gets cancer that is they're being disciplined.
Well, that's you know, I mean, if that's the case, I mean, if that's evil exists in the world and pain and death and suffering because we make bad choices and it's God's response to that, then I'm saying that that God's hand is very heavy.
But that's an assumption that's something that person personally did that gave him that. And there's no scientific or medical proof that cancer comes from something someone does. I mean, I mean, sure, there's people who smoke cigarettes and get it, but there's lots of people who don't ever smoke cigarettes.
Right. We don't know what's going on with it, no.
So that's an assumption. Now, you do believe that evil exists in the world.
Well, I think that...
So is evil not bad?
In terms of, evil does exist in the world in terms of things that we don't like to happen. You know, I mean, if things we don't like to happen, we've coined the term evil for them.
Right.
And so, yes.
So is evil bad or good?
Well, I would say, I see where you're probably trying to go with this. I would say that, you know, like I said, there's can't really call it evil, so to speak.
So would
more
you,
like things we just don't want to happen that we'd rather avoid.
Okay, so would you say that Adolf Hitler was bad or good, or was he evil? You're familiar with the Holocaust,
sure.
And what
sure.
Adolf Hitler did with all.
Well, I mean, did that really happen? No.
Oh,
I'm
yeah,
a skeptic.
That's historical. That's factual. There's
sure,
pictures. There's thousands of survivors who have actually said that happened. That is proven.
Yeah.
The Holocaust.
I read an article online that said that it may not have happened. So anyway, but let's just say it did for the sake of argument.
Okay, so
I would say more likely it happened. Yeah.
That was bad.
It was unfortunate, you know. I mean, just because one man wanted to,
rule the world,
you know,
take over.
Yeah, you know, he wanted to carry out his agenda, and you know, 6 million people had to pay for it. You know, that's just not—it's not cool.
No, it's pure evil. I can't imagine a worse thing that anyone could do. So there's got to be good and bad.
Okay, so. How does that come back and say, you know, if I define evil as something that's just something that we'd rather avoid, it doesn't necessarily mean there's a God. It just means that, you know, no one wants to, like, suffer in a prison camp. No one wants to, you know, be disrespected. Sure, you know,
right.
No one wants that, but it happens.
Well, I believe it happens because we're a fallen race of people. In other words, sin has come into our world. And so now we're actually separated from God because of our sinful nature.
Okay, let me just throw out this, throw down the gauntlet. You see, my thing is, we said evil exists, things we don't like, the pain, suffering, yes. But now, if God's all-powerful and all-knowing and all-loving, he would have known we were going to make these choices. He would have, if he's loving, he would have said, you know, I don't want to see 6,000 years of these people suffering, you know, even to teach them a lesson. I just don't, I'm just not going to go there. Why did he create us at all? Why did he allow it to happen? That's what I want to know.
God wants to safeguard our free will. He does not want us to be mere robots or puppets. He wants us to make conscious choices for the good.
Okay. You know, that's kind of weak.
Get him.
This is going to be awfully painful. Okay. No, it's not going to be a weapon. Hello, John. It's nice to have
you.
Good
evening.
In your premise about God being all-powerful and all-knowing and all-loving.
Well, that's what I'm saying that you say. So
right.
Yeah.
I think the assumption that you're getting out of those terms is because God is what we believe, all of these attributes, that he will choose to be all-powerful in all ways at all times, and he doesn't have the right to make decisions on when he chooses to use his power and chooses not to use his power. And okay. That would not be an accurate representation on what I'm speaking for a lot of people I shouldn't be speaking for, but what we believe. We believe that God is all-powerful, but he may decide not to exercise all of those powers. Now, why would one not want to exercise all of the powers? You raise the question. Why would God allow all of this to happen for 6,000 or more years? Is it that he's just really cruel and he has wound up a clock just to see how it runs? That is not consistent with what we have been taught through his word. Now, I realize you probably don't put a whole lot of credit in what we consider his word.
No, but I mean, I think that we can at least say, if we grant the validity of it, then what you say will be true. Yes,
okay. Well, God really explains why he chose to create.
Mm-hmm.
And why he chose to create humans the way that humans are is because he wanted to be in relationship to humans. Now, to be in relationship with something that doesn't have the capability of making a choice towards or away, then that really isn't relationship. That is really just an interaction, but it's not really a relationship.
Well, let me ask a question. Now, you say God is perfect, right?
Yeah, that's one of his attributes.
And then you say he needed something. He needs to have a relationship with us. So well, how could he be perfect and need something?
Well, he can be perfect, but he can choose to be in relationship. He can choose that it would be better for him and all of creation if there was a created being that would be in relationship to him.
Okay?
It would be much like, what kind of relationship would you have with your wife if your wife would have absolutely no choice on whether she was allowed to marry you and live with you or not? It would not be a very strong relationship at all.
Right.
But considering that she made the choice and said, yes, I am going to set aside my priorities and I'm going to be in relationship with you, that makes a bond between you that is more powerful than the other scenario. Now, you're right. There is evil in the world. And what I can best try to express with that is, with choice, you need to have contrast. And I believe that God is absolutely perfect. So in contrast to absolute perfection has to be absolute imperfection. And that, to me, is what I would describe as evil. I think that humankind has moved towards evil. I don't think that anyone really characterizes it completely to its fullest degree.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
All right, let's grant up to the garden. Let's say God created man. He created Adam and Eve. I think that's what Genesis 1 says. Something. Right. He created Adam and Eve. And then he let them make this choice, and then everything broke apart, right? The curse was on the world. There were thorns. Death entered the world at that point, all this kind of stuff. Now, let's clarify this. Adam made the choice, right?
Well, humankind made the choice.
And Adam makes made the choice. Humankind wasn't there.
Adam is humankind. And humankind makes that choice every day.
So
whether to choose to be in relationship or to move away from that relationship.
Okay, I get that, but see, here's the deal.
Okay.
You know, all right, Adam made the choice, but see, I wasn't there. John McDonald wasn't there to say.
You're here, and you're making your choice now.
Now, yeah, but if I was in the garden at that point.
You would have made the same choice because you're the same
individual.
How do you
know that?
Absolutely.
How do you know I would have made the same choice?
Because you have the same personality and the same wishes and wants, and you would have moved the same direction that Adam moved. We all do, and that's why we all are in what I consider to be in conflict with this perfect God. Now, I think where you were getting at is everything was hunky-dory in the garden. Adam made a decision, and then suddenly now everything changed. Why is that? Because God is perfect. And part of his perfection is he cannot be in contact or associate with imperfection. So how would this perfection ever be able to latch up with the creation that God has made to be in relationship? That would be a difficult thing to do, don't you agree?
Well, you know, if God is so perfect, you know, but he allows the imperfect, and he rubs shoulders with it. What's going on with God? That's kind of weird.
I don't understand what you mean by weird, but
well, I mean, wouldn't a perfect God just like perfection at all times?
Absolutely. And
you know, I mean, I like a perfect car with a clean interior. You know, that's the way I want it all the time. I don't want mud on it. I don't want to have to get in and like possibly get mud on me when I get in the car. But it sounds like God's okay with that. He likes perfection, and then he likes imperfection. He likes perfection, likes imperfection.
No, actually, God cannot associate with imperfection. And that's the reason that we have the separation that we have, and that's the reason that evil is in existence. That's why there's
okay,
pain.
Okay, so you're saying why don't have these manifestations of God, and you know we can see God and all this stuff, because he has intentionally separated himself from that, from
no,
us.
No, actually, I mean, you got the axis a little bit differently. We chose to separate ourselves
okay,
from
so
God.
Okay, so we have separated ourselves from
we
God.
We have separated ourselves from God.
Okay,
and God, I believe, has done something quite extraordinary to change that relationship.
Okay.
And this might be difficult for you to take, but he chose to allow an individual to actually take basically the role of paying for the transgression for the entire humankind. And that individual, I believe, was Jesus Christ. That individual was very perfect. And the reason why he was perfect was, in fact, he was a part of who God is. And because that he was perfect, he chose to pay the sin that I create every day. And that gives me a capability of being in association with a perfect God, even though in myself I am as imperfect as Adam. But Jesus Christ has basically gathered me up and given me a chance to be in relationship with this perfect God.
Well, you know, that sounds almost too good to be true, if what you said is
true. It does sound too good to be true, doesn't it? Anybody else? By all means, I don't mean to...
Let me just say that, you know, a lot of your arguments made sense. Once again, I'm still troubled, though, by this whole thing of what would motivate God to actually create a universe and allow people to mess it up, and what would motivate him to do that if he's, you know, you said that he wanted a relationship with us, but one of the things that doesn't quite make sense, if he's perfect in himself, he doesn't need anything. It would just seem weird for him to want anything outside of himself. You know, so to me, maybe that was a little weak.
Anything, and I was whole, but once I had a child, I sure do want to be in a relationship with that child, but I didn't do it out of a need, mm-hmm. at least that I didn't consciously do it.
But you made a decision to have a child in a really messed up world,
right?
It
wasn't because I felt empty inside or needed
right?
something.
Okay.
But now that I have that child, I love being in that relationship with that child.
Okay. So,
and I would desire to continue being in that relationship. I would not want anything to hurt
okay,
that relationship.
Okay, so you get pleasure out of that relationship. That's, okay. All right, guys. Act's over. I'm no longer a skeptic. It's kind of difficult to think as a believer and as an unbeliever at the same time. You know, you have to know their arguments very well. And what their thought patterns are and their worldview very well in order to pit it against what you hold dearly in your heart. Now, I like a lot, you know, you guys basically were trying to establish, okay, well, if evil exists, then, you know, for evil to exist, there has to be good, there has to be a moral law, and for a moral law to be, there must be a God. And that is not a bad argument at all. If you can get through a lot of their objections, which really, at that point, is kind of like a smokescreen. You know, atheism is really a mask. It really is. Intellectually, rationally, it cannot hold up. I mean, atheism means no God. Well, for you to be able to say there's no God, you would have to have infinite knowledge, would you not? You would have to know every square inch of the universe and be able to view it at all times, to be able to say there is absolutely no God in existence. And for you to know that, you would have what? Infinite knowledge. And if you had infinite knowledge, you would be God, right? So it doesn't make sense at all to say you're an atheist. It makes more sense to say you're an agnostic. You're not sure. You're not convinced. You know, to be a skeptic, it makes more sense. Now, one of the things that we were having trouble with is trying to answer this question of, you know, God wants to have a relationship with us. Was that worth having a relationship? Was that worth the pain and suffering and evil that basically had to be part of that deal? And we were kind of, you know, we were talking through it. We were working through it. So I think you're absolutely right. I think the first thing we need to say is, you know, we are the reason that pain and evil and death exist. We hold the smoking gun. We pulled the trigger. We were there. Adam represented the human race. And if you didn't like that choice, then God could have put you there. You would have made the same one because you would have had the same nature. Therefore, you would have made the same choices because we make choices based on our nature. So, sure, we were the reason. We invited the evil, death, and suffering with our choice, which you guys did a really good job of highlighting. Very good. Now, again, but we have to ask that question. A perfect God allowing this to happen just for a relationship would be weak to a skeptic. And so we would need to come back and talk about what is truly God's motivation in creating the world and then allowing it to fall in disrepair and then redeeming it. So okay. Well, let me ask you a question. What is the greatest good that man can do? What's the greatest good that man can do? Okay, to sacrifice. All right, so we're still on a human level. We're still on a horizontal level. To love God. What is the chief end of man? Ah, so it's one thing to love another person, another human being. That's pretty good. But to love the supreme being, the greatest absolute perfect being, is the absolute greatest good that man can do. So the highest good and the greatest good that man can do is to glorify God. Now, what's the greatest good that God can do? Ah, so if the greatest good that man can do is glorify God, then the greatest good that God can do must be to glorify himself. That's the greatest good that he can do. And because God always does that which is good, that is his nature, then he shall always glorify himself. Now, at that point, the skeptic might say, oh, so God is egotistical. It's all about God, right? It is. It is all about God, but not because he's like this egotistical grocery store kid that just says, I want, you know, and red-faced. And no, he's not self-centered. He is good-centered. He must always do that which is good. Doing good is glorifying himself. Therefore, he will glorify himself. He will always do that which is good. It's part of his nature to glorify himself. He's not being egotistical. But that's just if they throw that at us. Yeah, you know. Now, let me ask you a question. This is where we want to ultimately take them. Which brings God more glory? To be a creator? And he creates this world and it's all good and it's beautiful and everything is working and all the gears turn and everything. And it's perfect in its existence. And, oh, yeah, that's pretty nice. Or a creator who becomes a redeemer. to create that perfect world, and then to allow it to spit in his face and blaspheme him. And yet, he responds in love and grace and mercy and makes the ultimate sacrifice as the ultimate judge, placing our sentence upon himself. That brings God way more glory than just being a creator. And that's why God did this. He has a relationship with us. He brings himself the most glory. You know, philosophers often argue about, you know, the best of all possible worlds. This is the only way this world would be, based on what we know and understand about God. This is it. It would always be this way, because God is about glorifying himself as part of his nature, and this was the perfect plan to do it, and therefore this is the plan he pursued. So He is in that sense, you know. Right, right. Yeah, they right, right. They might.
Well, then what's this all about the second coming, and why would he need to do that then if he, you know, if this is where the most glory comes from, why would
right.
he
Right, right. They may ask that, and that's okay, because at least we know the gears in their mind are turning, and that's okay. You know, we're dialoguing, and you know, obviously, again, he wants the most glory possible. What's more glorious than the entire assembly of the redeemed standing before him in worship? After, you know, there is nothing greater.
So why doesn't he do it now?
That's a good question. Why doesn't he do it now?
Because he's waiting to save John. The previous John, I'm sorry.
Right. Right. Right.
Well, part of what I see in this is if God created and the creation stayed perfect, then we would never have the complete understanding of how much God is willing, how far God is willing to go to bring us back.
Yes. Right. Yes. That is a great answer. You see, if God was only a creator, then we could glorify him as an all-knowing God, an all-powerful God. We could certainly worship him in these ways, but we could never worship him as a merciful God, because we've never experienced his mercy. We've never had the opportunity. On this side of the fall, we know God is not only all-powerful and all-knowing, we know he is incredibly merciful and gracious. We would never have known these things about him. We could have never fully glorified him without that kind of knowledge about him. So once again, we see that creator or redeemer. So, now, will this completely convince the skeptic? You know, let me put it this way. The task of apologetics is not necessarily to make people believe. The task of apologetics is to clear the intellectual bushes so people can get a clear glimpse of Jesus Christ. Let's clear away this intellectual mess and all the mask and everything. Let's clear that away. Yes, we have answers. You know, what you're saying, it doesn't faze us. Look through this bush that you're trying, this smoke screen that you're trying to throw out at us, and just look, we have answers, and there's Jesus. That's really what apologetics is all about. It's not about arguing with someone into the kingdom. It's about saying, we have answers, our faith makes sense. Get behind the smoke screen a little bit and just take a look at Jesus Christ for who and what he is. So that's what I'm about in apologetics. I'm just trying to clear the view. So, okay. Anything else you'd like to add? That was really, really well done. You guys did a great job. I was very difficult, as you know. I was very hard. I mean, most people would not come at you with, you know, both guns firing like that, unless they were just absolute hardest skeptics and an atheist. And we do have some of those about. And Richard Dawkins is probably the most annoying of all this. You know, that guy, he gets under my skin. But he needs Jesus, doesn't he? He does, so we have to love him. And you guys did a very good job of being humble and of being gentle and being gracious. You know, I never felt offended as a skeptic. I never really did. You never appeared arrogant. And that's what the Bible says, doesn't it? It tells us to be gentle and patient with unbelievers. And you guys were great. So give yourself a hand. You did a good job.